Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. I'm Coach Andrew Poretz from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. My mission is to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. You can visit my website at www.myfuturecoach.com and follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/coachandrew. If you're listening live and you have a question, the phone number here is 646-929-2893. You'll be able to listen to the show on the phone, and if you press the number 1, this will let me know you have a question. We also have a live chat room right on the show page where you can feel free to join in. Tonight's guest is Nancy Snell, a professional certified coach and consultant specializing in adult attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, better known as ADHD. And in other words, bringing peace of mind to overwhelmed executives. Her focus is not about fixing a person, but on changing how he or she approaches getting things done at work so that high performance results. Nancy herself was diagnosed with ADHD over 15 years ago and is today very passionate about helping others live effectively and powerfully. She's all about helping her clients master the skills to juggle competing priorities and overflowing to-do lists so they can optimize performance, efficiency, and productivity. Her coaching process is fast, focused, gets measurable results, and you can learn more about Nancy at www.nancysnell.com and follow her on Twitter at twitter.com/coachnancysnell. Nancy, are you with us?
I am right here.
Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, first of all, you know, a lot of people have heard the term, but tell me, what is ADD, ADHD? Tell me more about this so we'll have a little bit of a grounding.
So, everybody banters the term ADD around today. ADD is a neurobiological disorder or disability, if you will. It's really about brain wiring and body chemistry. What we know is that it's caused by an imbalance or a deficiency of certain chemicals that regulate the brain's ability to regulate behavior and regulate itself. So it's really a diagnosis applied for adults, I mean, who constantly display certain characteristics. It is a medical condition. It can be treated. For a diagnosis of ADD, or ADD and ADHD today are interchangeable. In fact, it's more ADHD, but, you know, that's just semantics for purposes of this conversation. And so it can be treated. It has to have onset diagnostically by the age of 7. So these behaviors have gone on and on and on throughout one's life if you look at over history.
I just want to see if I understood what you just said correctly. Are you saying that this has to have happened by the age of 7?
Has to have onset by the age of 7.
So when somebody who has gone their whole life and through the 20s and 30s, they've never had this sort of a diagnosis, and they start having these things, and they start saying, I think I have ADD, it's something else.
See, there's this whole thing today about modern life,
mm-hmm.
and modern life, and some of and the information overload that we're all experiencing is impacting our ability to manage. So we're very much in a society that looks like what we might call ADD traits. However, diagnostically, this has had to be pretty much throughout your life. To have that diagnosis. Now, can you remediate the same way behaviorally around time management and people who are overloaded and can't get there to do? Absolutely. Best practices apply. However, for an accurate diagnosis, there has to be some history there.
So what might be the difference for somebody who has been diagnosed, they've had this all their life, versus somebody who suffers from modern-day information overload and all those sorts of things?
So when you say, what's the difference, can you be a little bit more?
Well, first of all, what are some of the symptoms that somebody who has ADD have? And also, I'd like to compare that to the person who has those things where they start thinking they have it, but they're really just overloaded.
Right. So some of the symptoms that we you know, that characterize this are what we call hyperactivity, distractibility, impulsivity. Let me explain a little bit about, you know, what those terms mean in this context.
Mm-hmm.
So hyperactivity is really about mental restlessness, jumping from task to task, having an overactive mind, you know, being overwhelmed a lot, like a motor running. Now, stereotypically, you hear about ADD, it's hyperactivity. I'm not ADD, I'm not hyperactive. You know, I can focus on things. So what ADD is in kids, in children, versus adults is very different. Let me stick with the definitions and
sure.
then and the symptoms, and then I'll come back to that because that's a big thing.
Yeah, it is.
That people don't, you know, so maybe hold that for me, hold that
okay.
thought and bring me back to that. So hyperactivity, as we know, in kids was where kids were, you know, jumping around on furniture, and you hear about little boys jumping all over the place. They can't sit still. They're, you know, destroying things. However, that was in kids. In adults, hyperactivity, it may then become about, as I said, restlessness and not being able to stay focused or stay on one thing, being very fidgety or impatient. That's what it will look like in adults.
Hmm.
Impulsivity, you know, where it used to be very physical, where a kid might hurt himself or herself or, you know, just having problems waiting turn, that might turn in adults to verbal impulsivity, meaning blurting out, saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, speaking out of turn. And then distractibility, which is really about failing to pay close attention to details or conversely, paying attention to a zillion things and a zillion details and missing all the social cues. And this is how it manifests in adults. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I'd really like to go back to that more about the child. And actually, one of the things, now when I was a kid, this didn't exist. Well, if it existed, I never heard of it.
Precisely. So what we know today is that we, as the adult, we're all the kids that were never diagnosed. So we've been carrying, I'm not including you, I'm just saying, for adults, we carried around and we built up a lot of stigma and a lot of shame and a lot of trying to compensate and trying to fit in, even though many, many, many of us are really successful.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would ever know this thing that we've been lugging around. We didn't even know. I didn't even know. And most didn't. Because today, as you said, we know about it. In fact, today it's probably overdiagnosed, you know, with the kids. But today the kids are diagnosed, they're caught in school, they're caught early, and the compensatory strategies are given. And, for example, my daughter is 24 now, almost. She was diagnosed when she was 8 in second grade. And at that time, and that's how I got into this, because in those days nobody ever even heard of this. And when this information was given to me, I became like a mother lion, and I went out there in the schools, learned how to advocate. Ultimately, I was learning for myself, too, to take care of my kid. But I began to learn everything about this. And so they had a different shot than we had as adults. So
you're saying, based on the ages that you're just talking about for your daughter, it sounds like that's the same age that you were diagnosed. When she was 8, it was when you were diagnosed, so shortly after that?
Correct. It was together, which is also very, very typical of what happens, because this is what we find is it's often genetically transmitted and hereditary.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll see, and you hear stories over and over, of a kid getting diagnosed and the parents saying, that sounds like me too. Because we didn't have that knowledge when we were growing up, because nobody knew about it. Think of all the years so many of us spent in therapy, you know, and around wonderful practitioners and really smart doctors, but it wasn't in the mainstream. And it wasn't really until Ned Halliwell wrote the book, Driven to Distraction, which was probably around that time, you know, 14 years ago, 15, where this whole thing, where he really brought it to the mainstream.
I'd like you to actually repeat that title for anybody who's listening who might want to read it, who hasn't heard it.
Oh, absolutely, because this is the seminal work. It's called Driven to Distraction. If you want to post that too, Andrew.
Yeah, I will.
Driven to Distraction, brilliant title in my opinion, mm-hmm. and it's by Dr. Ned Hallowell, Hallowell.
Great.
Yeah, so, you know, when anybody asked me if there is there a book to read, I said, well, yes, there's one. If you had to read one, just read one. And just so everybody knows, Hallowell is completely ADD. He's a Harvard-educated psychiatrist. And many ADDers say, well, I can't read a book. I can't sit and read. And precisely, this book was written for ADDers, meaning it's not a novel.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick it up, open it to any page at any time, and get something from it.
Sounds like my kind of book.
Exactly. It's the kind of book for so many of us.
So what are some of the things that would make somebody think, I might have that, I should probably find out?
Yeah, so I might want to explore it further. So let's see. Some of the things you might want to think about or look for, if you think you might be ADD, inconsistent performance despite great effort. So, you know, you're doing great 1 hour and lousy the next. So consistent
mm-hmm.
inconsistency. So you never quite feel together no matter how hard. So much of your energy is in keeping it together. And
right.
no matter what you do, you never quite feel like you have it together. There's always something.
Mm-hmm.
Loose ends that are driving you nuts all the time. Issues around time management. So you're finding that you're really terrible maybe at estimating in advance how long a task is going to take or getting organized around those kinds of things, organizing your thoughts and organizing your day and organizing your tasks. You're experiencing yourself procrastinating, just driving you crazy. You're procrastinating and avoiding, and you're really a last-minute kind of person always and just always sort of spending a lot of excess energy chasing yourself, trying to get things done. You're going off on tangents. Your mind is chronically wandering. Is this sounding like a profile of what I'm talking about?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
And I would imagine any one of these things you're speaking of, or even a couple or two or three of them, there are things that could happen to any one of us, and it does not have to have anything to do with ADD or ADHD, right?
Totally right. So this is about, for to be ADD, it's about chronic and persistent. And it happens over time, in spite of your best efforts. And these things are really bothering you.
Right.
You know, these things are impacting your ability to function the way you want to function. They're getting in your way. And that's when you might take a look at them. It's not about labeling.
And do you see a doctor for this? What type of a doctor do you see to find this out?
Oh, to find this out? So, yeah, there are doctors. There's no blood test. There's no brain scan. The closest we have, I believe, it's called a SPECT, S-P-E-C-T, the Amen, A-M-E-N, clinics
mm-hmm.
do a lot of brain work. Not diagnostic, but they're really able to see that the brains in ADDers are very different and different parts light up than a quote-unquote normal brain. So there are psychologists who do neurological testing, and they can diagnose. Very often, though, many of us self-diagnose by reading the history and by
right.
reading the scales and by reading these checklists. And then a formal diagnosis, I think, is really mandated more if you really want to explore medication. It's really
okay.
important. It's important for that. And medication has great efficacy. That's a whole other topic right there.
Right, which is like really not for us other than just to acknowledge that that's what's one of the things that they do for it.
Yeah, that's absolutely one of the things. And, you know, what we say is the pill is not the skill. So recovery, if you will, from this ADD disability is a multifaceted approach. The first thing is about education and understanding and reading everything you can. Another thing is about community. Another thing is about medication. Coaching is probably one of the best interventions that anyone could do because it's about action, it's about tasks, it's about structure. So the coaching enables people to have external structure where they can't mobilize internally, and the accountability, and have systems in place where, you know, where we're not on our own. So that's a great way to go.
Well, what kind of systems are the types of things that you would come up with as a coach for somebody?
So, for example, I have a proprietary system that I developed called Turn Intentions into Action. Mm-hmm. And it's a seven-step process, which is, in essence, what the coaching system looks like. Should I sort of tell you what those steps are?
Sure.
Okay. So what we do when somebody comes is we go in and we identify the challenges and the obstacles that are always stopping you. So we take that inventory. And I ask questions to find out what these challenges are. And then we get really clear on the big picture together, all of the individual parts that make up the blueprint or the moving pieces of one's life. So we're identifying the obstacles they're encountering or have, and we're finding out what stopped them to date and why these specific challenges exist in the first place. And then we design success. Now, that looks different for everybody, depending on what's going on. We design it so that they know what their life will look like, will feel like, will sound like once they've gotten the results that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And together we get very clear. You're aware of this process. Then we establish identifiable goals together. I like to call them macro. We work from macro to micro.
Okay.
And then we reduce each goal. And I think this is the most important part. And a lot of the work I do gets very granular and very labor intensive in here, which is about reducing each goal to manageable parts. One at a time, breaking them down into teensy-weensy small possible actions / next steps to take to start moving towards a bigger goal. So it's all in there about conscious decision-making.
Mm. Now,
and accountability.
And which is like that's where you and I are do some – we work that way.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to hear when you were talking about designing success, and you said it's different for everybody, but could you give me a couple of examples?
So, for example, let me think of somebody that I was working with recently. So, I worked recently with a marketing communications executive. He had been a marketing manager, a VP of brand manager, director of communications, had an amazing resume, and seemingly lots of success that was peppered with chronic constellation of behaviors that kept, and he actually kept getting fired. He lost many jobs because of lack of follow-through on projects, and these are also textbook, lack of inability to listen to instructions, poor time management, inability to prioritize and handle workloads. So what we did is we began delving into the specifics of each one of in each situation of what was stopping him on a very practical level, meaning we converted the theory into specifics so that we could begin to take action around each one of those things once we knew what the roadblock is, one teeny step at a time. So in this case, it turned out that we discovered that he didn't have a system in place for organizing his life day to day, meaning he didn't have a planner. He didn't have a calendar. So he had no sense of how to manage time. So once we identified that, we developed that together step by step, which involved going out and physically finding one that was going to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
We talked through, okay, in a very micro way, okay, do you want to experiment looking at 1 week at a time, 1 day at a time? What's worked for you? What hasn't worked for you? Talking about the habit of writing in a planner, where does that have to be? Where do you have to carry it? what stopped you from, and then how it functions. Meaning, so as we got, it's about sustainable skills, and it's about learning new behavior and integrating new habits in a very conscious and intentional way, that ultimately one begins to get one's whole life together around managing time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I want to remind anybody listening live here on Thursday night, if you have a question, you can call in at 646-929-2893. And if you've called in and you have a question, press 1 on your phone, and then I'll know that you have a question. Otherwise, I will assume you just want to listen. We do have somebody listening right now, and that's great.
Okay, great.
You also have a chat room live on the site.
Right. Hi, you out there.
That's right. It's
in
you
Radio
out there.
Land.
In Radio Land or Blog Talk Radio Land.
So back to this
yes.
client. So after the first month of doing this painstaking work together, he actually did have a planner and was actually using it. And I say it that way because it's so curious with executives, whether it's CEO or it's an MBA or it's a hedge fund manager. As we get into the unmanageability of their lives, 99% of the time it's because they don't have a planner in place and a little system around that that's working for them. So they have something here, something there, something, and as a result, they're scattered and really unhappy. So as was the case with this person, after a month, he actually got it and was using it. And so now he's doing a great targeted job search in a focused way, showing up for appointments and not overbooking himself. And, you know, he learned how to manage and plan and prioritize his to-do list. And he's also changed so many of the messages that he's telling himself to be more kind to himself now because he's feeling successful and he has hope today and feels way more in control of his life than he did a very short time ago. So that's sort of how the process goes.
Got it. Now, I just want to talk about the kinds of things that I'm wondering if you could help somebody with that I don't know if this means you have ADD, if this means, or if they're just other kind of areas. But for example, like I'm somebody who I'm the proverbial, I will forget my head if it wasn't attached person.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day I walked out of the house without my phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the second time in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've come up with all kinds of great little systems and alarms and multiple backups to remind me of all sorts of things, but then I still have those moments where I'm missing something somewhere and I forget something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if the kinds of things you do could help that sort of situation.
Well, absolutely. So I'm hearing, though, that the way you presented it, that this is an occasional thing that happens.
It's much better than it used to be. But, you know, these things happen, and I will, get really frustrated, why can't I find my keys?
For example, if we were working together, we wouldn't be talking in all these generalities. We would be working on one topic at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be, you know, I lose my keys all the time.
Right.
Right? So then we would drill into, okay, so let's talk about that. What goes on with you and your keys? And then within that conversation, we would be able to create a strategy for you around your keys. So it might be something like, where's someplace in your house where you live that you could consistently put your keys every single time?
Right.
Because we actually do find that people who put their keys metaphorically and realistically in the same place all the time increase their productivity exponentially.
Interesting.
That's a fact.
Well, I just learned something.
Okay, good. So in that case, what we would do is we would, you know, and this is nothing to do with ADD. This has to do with life manageability.
Mm-hmm.
So the conversation would be, okay, So, Coach Andrew, tell me, where in your home could you put your keys every single time you come in the door.
You know, I used to have this key thingy that attached outside of my my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had a paint job, it came down, and I've never, you know, reattached it. But that was a great place.
Okay, so that place worked for you.
Yeah, it did.
So what would you need to do to reattach it to that place?
I think it's probably nothing more complicated than getting some good, strong, double-sided tape.
Ah, so if you got some good, strong, double-sided tape, you could reattach it, and then you would have a place for your keys, so you wouldn't really have to worry about them, and you could reduce a little bit of stress.
Right.
Okay, great. So what do you need to do to get some double-sided tape?
I need to make a note of going out and getting some double-sided tape. It's really not that complicated. I could actually go right after the show. I can go to Rite Aid.
Ah.
Open till midnight.
So how committed are you to getting those keys back in a place where they're consistent?
Oh, this is great. Now that you've told me, now I don't know if I don't know if there's a cause and effect there. If I go and now take on having my keys in the same place every day, will now create that, you know, me being more effective, or if it's simply that effective people do that. You know what I mean? Still, there's a motivational possibility there.
Well, but the point is, it really doesn't matter.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
The whys don't matter.
Really matter.
What matters is whether you're ADD or you're feeling some discomfort because you just are really sick of not being able to find your keys every single time.
Right.
And it's annoying you, then there's a solution. And the reality is everyone always says, oh, this is so ridiculous. What a baby step and how simple.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel foolish that, quote, unquote, they didn't think of it.
Right.
And that's what's foolish. But yet, that's why we need each other. And you know this. You're a coach. This is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think through in a logical way. Okay, so now let's just see this out. So what you said, or what I heard, is that after the show tonight, you could go to Rite Aid and buy this tape.
Yes.
So what could stop you from doing that?
The phone rings before I go out the door, and next thing you know, I'm talking to somebody for an hour.
Okay, so got it. So you see what we're doing here? So if
sure.
we were coaching, we would make a commitment. You would make mm-hmm. a commitment, and then we would have some accountability around that. And before you know it, you would be so happy because you would not be worrying about your keys anymore.
Absolutely. So this right here, this could be the key for me.
This will hopefully be the key.
Absolutely.
Cool.
And I understand that we're talking about baby step, and we're not even saying that this means anything other than that I'm a guy who misplaces my keys.
Correct.
But I know
I've
used many strategies. You know, like I live and die by my PDA,
mm-hmm.
my phone, which is why I said, like, for me to walk out the door without it is pretty extraordinary. But this has all my appointments, and what I do, I'm a redundant calendar guy.
Mm-hmm.
I use Yahoo alerts and text messages subscribe to remind me of things that I have to do, and eventually they actually do become a habit.
Yeah, that's great. So you have controls and systems around you that you've devised that are working for you.
Yeah, and they're very redundant because I'm a snooze alarm hitter.
Yes.
So that's why I have the second alarm,
mm-hmm.
in case I hit that one too many times.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about individualized solutions.
Mm-hmm.
For
so how
function.
Did you, now you once you learned about ADD, which came first? You went for coaching, you became a coach, or you learned about ADD? Did these happen simultaneously?
Well, I started learning personally about ADD way before I became a coach, and then I went back when I left corporate media and broadcast buying and selling, I went and got trained at IPEC and Coach U.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the generic coach training. And then I began to layer the ADD specialization over that as a result of everything that I knew in my life experience. And lo and behold, there's a whole part of the profession totally devoted to ADD coaching. So that's how it happened for me.
Ah, okay. But it wasn't the original intention. Did you realize like this is like the perfect place for you in coaching?
I wasn't really sure. I just knew that coaching was the perfect place for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a degree in undergraduate in psychology, and I always thought I wanted to be a therapist. And because coaching also didn't exist. I mean, what is it, 14, 15 years old, really, as
mm-hmm.
a profession? It hasn't been around that long.
It's really around. It's about a quarter of a century, but it's really only in about the last 15 years that it started to hit places where regular people might start hearing about it. And then in the last 5 years, of course, it's really been exploding.
Correct. So, So I knew that coaching was going to be the right thing for me after all that seeking, and then the ADD specialization just. I didn't go into it for that reason, but that evolved, and then I knew that that was right, too.
So what is, where does this show up? How does ADD show up in the workplace?
Ah, what a great question. So I do a lot of, my focus is really working with successful business professionals who are either ADD or dragging around all these the same traits and having many of the same challenges. So it shows up in great ways and in challenging ways. So why don't I start with the good stuff for a change?
Okay, we like good stuff here.
Yeah, let's start with some of the positive of what you might see behaviorally in the workplace that could be ADD-like behavior.
Sure.
So it might be someone who is a great brainstormer, a high-level thinker, because the ADD brain tends to be open to receiving multiple streams of input and information at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, they can take in one person's ideas without turning away input from others and be very receptive and flexible. This is why you see a lot of CEOs,
right.
See a lot of creatives, art directors, creative directors, ripe with ADD. The ADD employee might come up with ideas that no one else seems to ever think of, probably has too many talents and bright ideas and can't harness it all at once, but they're like popcorn sometimes. It's just the creative energy and the brain popping all over the place is wonderful, and it can drive people crazy, too, especially in the workplace, but we're going to stick with the good for now. So enjoying working, someone who's really enjoying working with others who because they can compensate for their weaknesses and who appreciate their strengths. Really pioneers,
mm-hmm.
people creating new movements and spearheading innovation, using their great creative powers. Einstein, JFK, Thomas Edison, these people are all, as we know now, were ADD.
Really?
Yeah. And here's a great story. David Neeleman, who started JetBlue Airways.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Is, by his own admission, wildly ADD. And he, as I'm not sure if you know this, he invented the e-ticket.
I did not know that.
And here's the genius. Many of us are really brilliant because we have laser focus. We see things. We're in the road less traveled. Our brains go places people don't, like in Neeleman. And he invented the e-ticket. Why? Why do you think? Why?
Because he kept on forgetting his ticket when he went to the airport.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He couldn't remember. So think about that, innovation.
That's a phenomenal solution.
Yep. So we have that. So, again, profile-wise, we're ADDers, we're the life of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Never seem to have a dull thought or moment where the, mm-hmm. The employees who are like the greatest, most indispensable person who's probably driving you nuts, but you love the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the best person to be working with. We're marshaling unbounded energy for products that for projects that, that really are interest that
mm-hmm.
interest us.
Sure.
So, it, like after coworkers are you know running out of steam, we're still going. Have an uncanny ability to jump right into something here, which I always think is funny, without planning, and function very well on our feet. So that's part of the impulsivity we were talking about before, working to in a good way. We're very enthusiastic and passionate for change, and we're compassionate, we're empathetic. In fact, we're, you know, people in pain don't really scare us because we understand how they feel. So it's a great asset. You know, we can be a great asset for any company. So that's a lot on the good side. Now, on a little bit more challenging side, mm-hmm. any questions about that?
No, but it's, you know, you described a lot of things that I think are true about me, so.
You know, I have to say that
yeah.
when I have, obviously, this is my subject matter and expertise, and so I talk about this a lot in a lot
mm-hmm.
of different places with all kinds of different people, and it's rare to ever have a conversation where someone doesn't either say, I think I'm ADD, or my daughter's ADD, or my mother's ADD, or it's so prevalent, and it touches so many of us, and it's so unnamed, or stigmatized, or people make a joke, but they really don't have any clue what this thing is all about. That's why I really am grateful for this opportunity you're giving me tonight to have a, to speak about it. And hopefully somebody out there in Radioland will hear something that will help them.
Hello out there in Radioland.
Hello, Radioland. Because it's so misunderstood. And there are, did you know, may or may not, that
yes.
What we know is 4 to 5% of the U.S. adult population is ADD, which translates probably to 12 million people. And as of today, 85% of those 12 million are completely undiagnosed and untreated.
And that's a lot of people.
Yep, and so you can project that into numbers and cost to productivity and cost to the bottom line
mm-hmm.
in corporate America by not naming this and not having simple solutions to deal with this.
I mean, it's potentially we're talking about billions of dollars.
We are talking about billions. In fact, I probably should have sent you, and I could after if you want to put it up, some of the studies. I mean,
sure.
There are significant studies that have been done, and I believe it was $588 billion in lost revenue due to undiagnosed ADD in the workplace.
Wow.
I could be completely misquoting it, but it is definitely in the billions. There are two studies.
Yeah, if you have like a link to that, I would definitely
yes,
put
I
it
do.
On the. I would put it in the blog for the page.
Mm-hmm. I will send you that because that's really compelling information.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so
stuff.
We looked at some of the good things, and so what is an ideal environment for somebody with ADD in the workplace?
So an ideal environment is where there's support that's readily available, and you can get on-the-spot answers versus having for example, having a boss that is, you know, providing, you know, managing in a very procedural, bureaucratic fashion, because that's torture.
Mm-hmm.
We need the support. We need a supervisor says, you know, let's write down your questions and we'll talk about them together in a supervisory session. So we need that. We need some independence in an environment. We can't be restricted and, you know, micromanaged. We need... which is, you know, sort of probably not that possible all the time, but we need as little stress as possible or more. We function better, many of us function better when the stress is a little bit less. Whereas a stimulating job, you know, can challenge you, it can also reduce the stress. We don't want to, I guess what I'm trying to say is if it's way too stressful,
mm-hmm.
our circuits overload and we can't operate, and the same person without that kind of stress on them can be much more productive. So it's about optimal stimulation. And
that's an interesting, I mean, some of the things you're describing. I would imagine that a lot of managers who might hear this would think, no way would I run my business like that, even though if they were to think of it in another perspective, it would more than likely dramatically help their business. But I would imagine that there's a lot of places where you're not going to find that, unless, of course, you're working for Google, which I hear is the best place in the world to work.
Meaning, Ned, I got lost with what you were.
Sure.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Well, I was going with that is that I would imagine that finding a place to be like that, if you were to bring those attributes of a workplace to somebody who could create it, they might just say, "Oh, yeah, good luck with that." And there, meaning that since you may well be in a place where it's just not going to happen, how will you, as somebody with ADD, function best in a place where they're just not going to give that kind of support?
Well, you're not going to function too great.
Okay.
You're going to be really stressed out. I mean, again, we're used to we attract a lot and we take a lot on. And I guess with regard to the stress, we do mobilize. We do best with deadlines and stress and high pace.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ultimately all about balance. And there's a big spectrum of ADD, which I didn't talk about. Not everybody is like that. Some people are immobilized by their ADD, and they just collapse under it. Some people get more motivated in the stress. So it's a matter, ultimately, many times, of finding a job that is suitable to who you are, because this is a disability. And we can't cram ourselves into every place, because it's just not going to work. You know, we're used to tolerating a lot, so you'll get in there, you'll do the job, you'll show up, you'll do the, but you'll be miserable until and unless you find another job. There are situations where you need to find another job if you don't want to have that level of stress. Does that make sense?
Right. So what you're really saying is that if your job does not have some of those types of qualities of the ideal environment, that you're really just better off finding another place.
Very possibly. Yeah, that's the net.
Okay, so of course there's in a tight market, there may not be the kinds of opportunities that there are in some other times.
Oh.
I'm really, really, really trying to avoid the phrase that I hate, in these economic times.
Well, right, but that's sort of going into another conversation, I think,
uh-huh.
Because, to come back to the question of what makes an ideal environment,
right,
for ADDers and why.
Yes.
You know, so we're not gonna apply, I don't think, the conversation to the economic times, because we're just talking it in the corridor of one conversation, right? And a lot of people are trapped, and a lot of people are doing things, for those reasons today,
right,
that are making them miserable. But we're not. I think we're just talking about what's a typical environment.
Mm-hmm.
If there are ADD people listening,
yes,
and they're miserable, they're not crazy. They may be in an environment that can't support who they are or what they need. For example, I wrote an article about bosses, good bosses and bad bosses. And there are both out there. We need, and I have had both. There was one boss who was very critical of me and who micromanaged me and who didn't support me. And as a result, my performance, well, sales was great, but what I felt like was horrible all the time. You begin to get paranoid and you're just not on your game. You're not happy. Versus another boss who would say, okay, come on, come in. What can I help you with? Let's look at it together.
Right.
It was a completely different thing. And so it became very clear that I needed to find and be with people who would be like boss number two. That was my choice.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have, meaning a place where ADD behaviors are more tolerated. And you're not talking about, that's another conversation, you're not talking about ADD in the workplace. We're not talking about it head on. With managers, we don't go in and talk about it. That's a whole other conversation. Yeah, there are a lot of schools of thought on that. And that's really an important other conversation, too. But, you know, we need orderly environment around. We need good orderly direction. We need tolerant people around. We need we love short-term projects that have beginning, middle, and end. And we need help with long-term projects. You know, we need freedom and autonomy and opportunities to create work that stimulates and challenges us in positive ways and breaks from long conferences or long meetings and helpful colleagues and compassionate people. And there are those environments. That's what will work best.
Okay. And what's, and you know, really what I'm just trying to get to is that until you're there, what do you do?
Meaning?
Until you're in the environment that is going to support you.
Oh. Mm.
What are some things somebody could do to deal with things better?
So if you're in a situation, you mean, where it's not a cooperative environment.
Yeah, and let's say you're looking, you know that you need to find something that's going to work for you better, but until you do, you have to do something, right?
So I would, you know, so again, that's a really tough question, and we all know there's no simple answer to that. I think a lot of that is in the communication piece. It's probably, whatever kind of higher power you have, it's probably about looking to other ways of getting support outside of the workspace, because if you're talking about a situation where it's not going to happen there, no way, no how.
Or maybe it just might take too long. I mean, you may start the process. You may go to a place, be in a place, and try to affect change. It will create that supportive environment, but that might not happen overnight.
Well, it would never happen overnight unless your manager, you know, which can happen overnight, had that too, where the horror manager disappeared or, you know, quit and then a new person came in. Or I've had the opposite too, where a great manager, you know, left and then a horror show came in. So the point is that we have to make the best of it, whatever it is, for whoever's giving us a paycheck.
Yes.
And that involves making concessions and communicating with people. And I think it's always an opportunity to grow, you know, through that time. And
absolutely,
to have a structure and a game plan and be very intentional as to what you're doing, so you're not coming and being a victim every day and complaining and feeling trapped. You may feel trapped, but you'll know that you're not if you have a plan, an exit plan, and a strategy on a daily basis.
And so what we're looking for, though, is, you know, practical solutions for decreasing your frustration.
Yeah. So, but we're talking about two different things. You're talking now about practical solutions for decreasing frustration when you're in a bad bad work environment.
Right.
Versus practical solutions that you might ask for in an environment that's going okay.
Yeah, and that's another one. So I guess we can do one at a time.
Right. I mean, for ADD, in the ADD quadrant, we're talking about there are a lot of practical solutions that you can have around you when you're in your job to maximize your efficiency. For example, you want to create ongoing accountability around you. For the adults struggling with ADD, I always like to say structure equals freedom. So left to our own devices, we would tend to meander, to put it mildly.
Run around in circles.
Right, exactly. So the structure holds and the accountability holds that in place. and enables us to be more productive. So we also like to work in small spurts rather than long hauls. This is like if for a manager was working with an ADD employee, these are some of the things that, as and if they're willing to work together, and there are environments, there are great companies who are want to make investments, and I think this is important to say, who are willing to invest in their people rather than just like in my old business. My husband used to say, your business doesn't invest in people, they just fill slots.
Right.
And there are a lot of companies. For ADDers, it's worth our time to find companies that want to invest in their human capital.
Can you imagine? Have you ever seen the movie Office Space?
No.
Well, if you ever get to watch it, it's a very, very funny movie. It's probably the ADD's person's nightmare.
Because?
Just the kind of, it's like the anti-supportive work environment.
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, it's that we can't be at our best because we're so used to being criticized and so petrified on some level inside anyway that you just need to be fortified and not, you know, not criticized all the time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so again, breaking tasks down into smaller tasks, a lot of encouragement about making lists and introducing this concept, you know, of getting help so that you can be productive. So whether it's, you know, it's at work, whether it's being sure that you have a good assistant or there's a great bookkeeper or a good
mm-hmm.
filing system. I remember one job I had, I think it was before I was even diagnosed, but when I was selling, you know, a gazillion television stations and 4 levels of management accountability and 18 buyers and 40 emails every 10 minutes threatening to get shut out of pieces of business, and there was a lot of detail and a lot of transaction going on. And I remember my assistant was really not good. And as a result, I was imploding because I could not do my job unless I had a great help. So we have to have that in place. Otherwise, it's just a nightmare. So an environment for a company to recognize that and give that support and help will only maximize the potential of the employee. You know, have the right kind of supplies around. That sounds basic, but it's really, really true. Focus on jobs, you know, again, that maximize our strengths. And, you know, so these kinds of things.
And do you come into companies and help them create an environment?
You know, I haven't. My business has been really doing one-on-one work with business professionals, but my next frontier is really to begin having conversations with HR and within companies just from an educational point of view so that I can be in the toolbox and that they may understand what it is they're dealing with when it comes up and then know where to go to get help for it.
Yes, I could really see you coming into a corporate environment and transforming that in a way that creates a win for the ADD employees, it creates a win for the company, creates a win at the bottom line based on what you were telling me earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. The challenge around that, which I'm working very hard to work with, is around, as we started the call, around the stigma of ADD,
mm-hmm.
and you cannot diagnose. And there are legal ramifications, there are disability, there, you know, from an HR perspective. However, having said that, it's all in the conversation, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. There is no reason for anyone not to pay attention to this because it's hugely impacting their bottom line, it's impacting the well-being of their employees, it's impacting their productivity, it's impacting everything, and there's some really simple, easy ways to work with it.
And you just said that you work primarily one-on-one. Do you do any other kinds? Do you do any workshops or anything like that?
No, I don't do workshops. I really, that's not my model. I really love what we're doing here. I really mm-hmm. love the town hall format. I love questions. I love, you know, speaking. I'm really a specifics kind of girl. I really
gotcha.
Love working in the specific of what the it is, as opposed to sort of talking about concepts all the time, like
okay,
we did
so
with the keys.
That means, yes. So that means that somebody listening to the show, if they want to be working with you, Nancy, they're not going to be finding you at a workshop or a seminar, but they're going to be working directly with you.
Yes, absolutely.
So now would be a good time, with 4 minutes remaining in the show, for you to let people know how to do that.
So the easiest way to do that would be to go to my website, which is nancysnell.com, read through, see if you identify, look at some of the programs that I have and the way I coach and some of the offerings that I have, and then reach out, send me an email or call, and we'll set up a 30-minute complimentary conversation to see and talk about possibilities, to see if we're the right team.
Awesome. So that means anybody will want to find your email address or phone number, they'll find it on Nancy. It's nancysnell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they could follow you on Twitter at Coach Nancy Snell.
Yes.
Great. Well, Nancy, I want to thank you so very much for being with us here tonight and for some terrific information. And I look forward to going out and getting my double-sided tape.
Can't wait.
And I want to thank everyone for listening. We're going to be back next week, next Thursday night, and I want you all to have an outstanding next 7 days. You can find me on www.myfuturecoach.com and follow me at Coach Andrew on Twitter. Thank you, and good night, everyone.